From the watchmen of ancient cities to the rise of modern police forces, and from medieval dungeons to today's correctional institutions, our systems of law enforcement and punishment have shaped societies for centuries. Welcome to Silver and Blue, tracing the history of policing and corrections, the podcast where we will uncover the beginning to the present of policing and corrections. Each episode, we'll explore how justice was enforced, how punishment evolved, and what these legacies mean for us today. Let's step back in time and see how order and disorder came to be. Welcome back. I'm your host, Tammy McDermott. So glad you could join me. Today, we will start the first in a series of episodes that will look into ancient Rome and how their domination over most of the Western world influenced law, policing, and corrections for centuries. When we talk about ancient Rome, we're talking about a civilization that didn't just simply practice law, it engineered it. Rome built one of the most influential legal systems in human history, a system that still echoes in modern courts, contracts, and constitutions. But Rome didn't begin with a sophisticated legal code. Its legal, policing, and correctional systems evolved slowly, shaped by conflict, expansion, and the constant need to maintain order in a growing and increasingly complex society. To understand how Rome developed these systems, we have to go back to its earliest days, long before emperors, long before legions marched across continents, to a small settlement on the banks of the Tiber River. In Rome's earliest period, during the time of the kings, law was not written down. It wasn't debated in public forums or interpreted by trained legal experts. Instead, law was sacred knowledge, controlled by the priestly class known as the pontifices, not to be confused with the Christian use of the word. Remember, at this time, Romans were a polytheistic society and worshipped gods such as Mars, Venus, Jupiter, and Apollo. As such, these priests were the guardians of ritual, tradition, and legal procedure. They alone knew the proper forms for contracts, the correct words for legal actions, and the penalties for wrongdoing. This secrecy created a deep divide between the patricians, who were Rome's aristocratic families, and the plebeians, the common people. Patricians had access to legal knowledge. Plebeians did not. So if you were a plebeian, you could be taken to court without even knowing what the law said. This imbalance eventually sparked one of the most important political struggles in Roman history, the conflict of the orders, a centuries-long push by plebeians for political and legal equality. The turning point came around 450 BCE, when the plebeians demanded that the laws be written down. I think that's a good point. Their argument was simple. How can you obey laws you're not allowed to see? Rome's answer was producing the 12 Tables, the first public written legal code in Roman history. These laws were engraved on bronze tablets and displayed in the Roman Forum for all to see. The 12 tables covered everyday life, property disputes, family law, debt, injury, inheritance, and court procedure. They were practical, direct, and, well, sometimes harsh, but they were transparent. And for the first time, every Roman, regardless of class, could know the rules that governed them. So now let's break down how Roman justice went after the 12 tables were enacted. As Rome expanded and its legal system grew more complex, the city needed officials who could interpret the law, oversee disputes, and adapt legal principles to new situations. This responsibility fell to the praetors, some of the most important magistrates in the Roman Republic. Praetors ranked just below the consuls and held imperium, the same executive authority that allowed consuls to command armies and enforce the law. But while consuls focused on military and political leadership, praetors became the architects of Roman justice. Originally, Rome only had one praetor, the praetor urbanus, responsible for legal disputes between Roman citizens. But as Rome's population grew and its interactions with foreigners increased, a second praetor was created, the praetor peregrinus, who handled cases involving non-citizens or disputes between citizens and foreigners. This division allowed Roman law to stretch beyond the city's boundaries and adapt to a multicultural world. What made praetors truly influential was their ability to issue annual edicts. At the start of each year, a praetor published an edict outlining how he intended to interpret and apply the law during his term. These edicts built on the work of previous praetors, refining legal principles, clarifying procedures, and filling gaps in the written code. Over time, these edicts became one of the most important sources of Roman law. They allowed the legal system to evolve without rewriting the 12 tables. Their interpretations shaped contracts, property rights, inheritance, and criminal procedure across the Republic. And praetors didn't just sit in courtrooms. Because they held imperium, they could also command armies, govern provinces, and preside over the Senate when consuls were absent. Their authority blended judicial, executive, and sometimes military power, a combination that made them central to Rome's ability to govern both the city and its expanding territories. While praetors shaped the law through edicts and decisions, another group shaped it through ideas, the jurists. Jurists were scholars, philosophers, and legal experts who wrote opinions, commentaries, and analyses of legal cases. They didn't hold public office, they held intellectual authority. Their writings explained how laws should be interpreted, how contracts should be structured, and how disputes should be resolved. Jurists such as Gaius, Papinian, and Ulpian became some of the most influential legal thinkers in history. Their work formed the backbone of later Roman law and eventually influenced medieval Europe, the Renaissance, which didn't come until the late 1400s, and even modern civil law systems. If praetors were the engineers of Roman justice, jurists were the architects, designing the intellectual framework that held the system together. So we have the thinkers and the officials who could interpret and help with solving the disputes of the Republic. Now it needed officials who could carry Roman law into newly conquered territories. This role fell to the provincial governors. A governor was not just a political leader. He was the supreme judge, the head of policing, and the ultimate arbiter of punishment in his province. That's a lot of power. I think I want his job. His court heard cases involving Roman citizens, major crimes, and disputes between local communities. Governors traveled with a staff of legal advisors, scribes, and lictors, attendants who carried the fasces, bundles of rods symbolizing the power to punish. Their presence reminded everyone that Roman justice was backed by force. A fair governor, however, could build loyalty. A corrupt one could spark rebellion. The trial of Gaius Verus, the notorious corrupt governor of Sicily, shows how governors could abuse their power and how Roman courts could hold them accountable. If you want more information on Gaius Verus, check out our website and there'll be a link to the trial of Gaius Verus. As Rome grew into a metropolis of over 1 million people, maintaining order became a major challenge. Early Rome had no police force, but by the time of Augustus, the city had developed some of the earliest specialized policing institutions in history. The cohorts urbanae functioned as Rome's first true police force. They patrolled the streets, broke up fights, controlled riots, and maintained order in a city known for its crowded streets and frequent unrest. They were armed, trained, and organized, a major step toward modern policing. Rome was a city of wooden buildings, narrow alleys, and open flames. Fires were constant threats. To address this, Augustus created the Vigiles, a combined firefighting and night watch force. Their duties included patrolling streets after dark, extinguishing fires, preventing arson, and arresting thieves and runaway slaves. They were the closest thing Rome had to a municipal police department. Together, the urban cohorts and the Vigiles formed a policing system that blended public safety, crime prevention, and crowd control, a model that would influence later European cities, and we still use today. Once the public safety and the policing was in place, now we look to corrections. Corrections in Rome were shaped by practicality, public order, and the needs of an expanding empire. Like the Greeks, Romans did not use prisons as long-term punishment. Prisons were holding facilities, not places of rehabilitation. The most infamous Roman prison was the Tullianum, or as we know it today, Mamertine Prison, a dark underground chamber near the Forum. The origin of this prison dates back to around 650 BCE, but it is best remembered for being used in the earliest years of the ancient Republic. The basic use of the prison was for those awaiting trial, debtors, political prisoners, and enemies of the state. Tullianum also saw some well-known prisoners of its time stay in the prison. Among some of the names that you might recognize are Vercingetorix, who Julius Caesar captured from Gaul, and St. Peter, who it is held left a facial imprint on the walls of the prison. Although conditions were harsh, imprisonment was temporary. For pictures of the Mamertine prison, I'll also put those in the show notes. Roman punishments varied, widely depending on social class, citizenship, and the severity of the offense. There were fines for minor offenses, corporal punishment for slaves and non-citizens, remembering that in ancient Rome, Roman citizens had their own social class. Slaves and non-citizens were treated very differently. For elites or nobility, there was exile, which means you were sent away from ancient Rome and could not return. Punishments also included forced labor in mines and quarries. And for very serious crimes, there could be execution. Execution methods ranged from beheading, and this was reserved for citizens because it was considered cleaner and a nobler way to die, to crucifixion for slaves and non-citizens. And this was a very public way to show other slaves and non-citizens what would happen if they got caught doing something very serious. Punishment was both a legal tool and a public spectacle. This would be continued as Rome moved and conquered its way through Italy and the West. In the next episode of this arc, we will take a look at how the ancient Romans conquered the whole of Italy and how their ways of law, policing, and corrections was meshed and then overrun to be the only way. Join me next time on Silver and Blue. That wraps up today's episode of Silver and Blue, tracing the history of policing and corrections. This podcast is produced by LCC Connect. You can listen to other podcasts in the LCC Connect family by going to lccconnect.com. If you want to listen to this podcast on demand, go to lccconnect.com and visit the Silver and Blue webpage. Until next time, keep questioning, keep learning, and keep the dialogue alive.